Your kids are at war again. One screams that her brother looked at her funny. The other insists his sister breathed too loudly. You're exhausted, bewildered, and wondering if you failed some fundamental parenting test. Here's the truth nobody tells you. Sibling rivalry isn't the disease, it's the symptom. The real issue runs deeper, touching something primal in every child's heart. Each battle over toys, attention, or perceived slights masks a terrifying question. Is there enough love for me? Children don't fight because they're broken or because you've done something wrong. They fight because they believe parental love is finite, that one child's gain means another's loss. This scarcity mindset transforms siblings into competitors rather than companions. The revolutionary insight that changed countless families: you can't eliminate these feelings, and you shouldn't try. The path forward isn't about stopping the anger, but about teaching children what to do with it. Acknowledging children's negative feelings creates connection. Dismissing them creates distance. When a 7-year-old said she hated her baby sister, her mother simply responded, "You really wish it could be just the two of us again." That night, the girls fell asleep with their arms around each other. Instead of, "Don't talk about your brother that way," try, "You sound really angry at him right now." Rather than dismissing feelings with, "You love your sister, you're just tired," acknowledge them. "Sometimes she really gets on your nerves." When reality disappoints, offer fantasy. "You wish you could have a room where nobody ever touched your stuff." One mother's 10-year-old hurt his younger brother. Instead of punishing him, she said, "You must have been incredibly angry to hurt Timmy like that." Her son's face crumbled. He later spent hours being kind to his brother. Feelings acknowledged lose their power. Feelings denied grow stronger. Why can't you be neat like your sister? That sting you feel? That's what comparisons do to children. One woman shared how comparisons with her sister Dorothy damaged not just their relationship, but her entire sense of self, a wound still tender decades later. Two middle-aged brothers still compete over kidney disease treatments, locked in a pattern their father established 50 years ago. We compare without thinking. When overwhelmed, comparisons slip out. "Your brother would never act this way," or "You're so much better behaved than your sister." Each comparison drives an invisible wedge between siblings. The solution? Describe what you see without reference to anyone else. Instead of, "Why can't you hang up your clothes like your brother?" try, "I see a jacket on the floor." Rather than, "You're so much neater than your sister," simply say, "I appreciate how you hung up your coat." One mother caught herself when her son called about college grades. Instead of saying, "You're doing so much better than Karen did," she focused solely on him. "That must feel great to see your hard work paying off." No comparison needed, no sibling resentment created. Parents exhaust themselves pursuing an impossible goal, treating children exactly equally. One child demanded equal ice while standing ankle deep in it. Another insisted on Roy Goat's Gruff alongside Billy Goat's Gruff. A mother actually cut off one daughter's curls so both girls would look the same. The absurdity reveals a profound truth. Children don't need equal treatment. They need unique treatment. When a daughter asked her father who he loved best, he avoided the "I love you equally" trap. Instead, he said, "Each of you is so special to me because each of you is so different. How could I bear losing someone who brings me such joy?" She needed to know she was uniquely valued, not equally valued. One mother liberated herself by buying a unicorn shirt for one daughter without getting something for the other. When questioned, she simply explained, "Each of you gets what's right for you." Fairness doesn't mean sameness. It means seeing each child clearly and responding to who they actually are. Roles imprison children. Parents cast them, siblings cast each other, children cast themselves. One woman's brother was praised for looks while she felt invisible. Another bore the responsible one burden. A slob defined himself against his brother, Mr. Clean. The solution? Treat children as you hope they'll become, When one son deliberately burned his brother with a hot spoon, his mother resisted labeling him evil. She referenced Uncle Stu, who did terrible things as a child, but grew kind, then held him accountable. You have a superior capacity to be nice. Use it. The transformation was remarkable. A scatterbrained daughter organized the pantry perfectly when given the chance. A big boy found relief embracing his baby side. One father organized a strength bombardment where siblings shared specific appreciations. Another family created a new normal where their child with cerebral palsy ice skated alongside his athletic sister, each at their own level. Children rise or fall to meet the identity we create for them. When siblings fight over property, attention, or power, standard interventions backfire. Ordering them to stop increases frustration. Taking sides breeds resentment, and removing privileges punishes without teaching. A better approach? Acknowledge their anger, listen to each side, express faith in their problem-solving ability, then leave. For dangerous situations, describe what you see, establish clear limits, and separate them. The revelation: children solve problems when given tools. One mother mediated a library book dispute that escalated to hitting. After separating her sons, one demanded revenge. She acknowledged his feelings and listened. He shared troubles from school. Once heard, he calmed and played peacefully. Another family faced constant music battles in a shared bedroom. Parents confiscated radios until the boys created a solution. At the family meeting, they expressed deeper feelings about their blended family. The boys independently cleaned the basement and created separate music spaces. For unresolved conflicts, facilitate with structure. Call a meeting, establish speaking turns, write down concerns, invite solutions, decide on actions, and schedule follow-up. This teaches respect while empowering children. Years later, reconciliation often becomes possible. One woman confronted her mother about being cast as the perfect child, explaining how constant praise created an emotional prison. A man reconnected with his twin Eric after years of competition. Eric revealed he'd felt disadvantaged, believing his twin was the favorite. Their three-hour lunch became a watershed, revealing how both had suffered yet emerged understanding they were just two nice guys trying to grapple with the frustrations of being brothers. Siblings possess a powerful drive to reconnect, regardless of age or estrangement duration. One-on-one time provides emotional nourishment that helps children tolerate siblings. When children know they'll have dedicated parent time, they're less likely to provoke fights for attention. Regular family meetings maintain relationships, allowing problem-solving in minutes weekly. Sibling relationships constantly evolve, with periods of closeness and distance. You can't mandate permanent harmony, but you can remove obstacles. In later years, siblings become memory guardians. Competition falls away. What remains is shared history, the reward for parents who helped navigate childhood's turbulent waters. Your family is the training ground for all relationships. How you teach children to relate during conflicts becomes your lasting gift. Not perfection or the absence of struggle, but the skills to move through conflict toward connection, to express difficult feelings without damage, to see each other as whole people rather than rivals. That's the inheritance siblings carry forward.